today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Like, you know the scene in early on in the movie Singles where they like are at like the grunge bar or whatever, and it might have been Chris Cornell on stage or something like that, or whatever, but I'm like picturing you.
Hey everybody, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. Thank you for tuning in. If you've been listening this week, you know we are knee-deep into the new album by Total Strangers, a musical project combined of Mike Wagner and James EPJ Petrillo. They've been so kind to spend their time with us going over each song on this record. They put a tremendous amount of work into it. Lots of folks collaborated with them to make this album sound as good as it does. And we are going to move the conversation right along today. We're going to start off with the seventh track on the record, Watermarks. And you will hear me ask about that right off the top. So why don't we thread up the tape and roll it for Total Strangers, track by track, Watching the Sun Go Out, day four.
The next song, Watermarks. Now, this one was released before the full album. Is that right, Mike? Was this the first one?
Yes. That's right.
And why did you choose Watermarks to be sort of the drop or the single drop from the record?
Mostly, I think, because we all loved it. It was like,
that's good enough.
I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, I was saying before, it's like when you come up with a riff and you know it's a good riff, you're like, yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Because they don't happen very often, you know, because I can't tell you how many times I pick up a guitar and think, oh, please let a riff fall from the sky, you know?
Yeah.
And it you just don't know when it's going to happen. And it's a great riff. And going back to Mark and Eric on the bass and drums, I mean, they just kick on it, right? I mean, Mark's bass is just like, it was so funny because he sent it to me when he sent me the bass tracks and he's like, I don't think these are any good. I don't know, man. It's like, I did probably 24 takes of this. I think it's terrible. And I put it on because I'm like, okay, I put it on. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? These are great. And then Eric just nailed the drums. It's just like, I just love it. I just love that song.
Confusion grounds low.
we could talk about EPJ's vocals and
yes,
and Justice. So it's kind of hard. It was kind of hard to do because they were never in the same room together. But like on the chorus, that when they're kind of do when EPJ and Justice are duetting, I freaking love
it's
that.
It's a super blend of me and Justice. It's like, who is that? Is that me? No, it's just, it's cool.
Yeah,
that is great.
I did talking about the production. I worked really, really. You know, I spent a lot of time. I mean, if I knew what I was doing, it would have gone faster. But I really wanted it to be like there's like that sort of one voice mixing. Since everything comes back to the Beatles, that was my inspiration for it. Like on Day Tripper, like how they kind of have that one voice blending. Like there's certain songs where John and Paul sing together, and they just sort of blend perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I mix that. So that, and I love that.
It totally worked.
And the point of the story, this is where Watermarks is about. People have low watermarks, like the really awful things they do, and the high watermarks, the things that, and somehow they try to use these high watermarks that are not really, you know, they're not really anything, you know, you did. It's just some useless gesture or whatever. And they try to use that to cover up the low watermarks.
Mm.
And that's what that song is about. And it's even more important, they let these things go on and people are harmed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and that's what the no water cleans a scar that owns me. Like once you let it pass, the damage is, if you will, is done. And then to sort of insult to injury, it's like, oh, well, I did this little thing over here. That sort of makes it all better. I was like,
right.
It doesn't.
Yeah, so that's totally makes sense. And now I want to remark to people before we go on to next song. In Bandcamp, when you click on the actual song, you will see the lyrics. It will come up. And so if you're like me and you've downloaded, you know, you bought the album and you downloaded the whole thing and you're just listening to it, you can actually go to Bandcamp while you're listening and see the lyrics for the individual songs or pick something out. And there's also the credits there. So you can see some of these folks that we've been talking about when you click on it.
I just want to ask, EPJ, vocally in this song, how you were approaching it. Because I get sort of, you know, early 90s kind of grunge sing vocal delivery in this song. Was that in your mind at all?
Well, it's a good time to say that, like, vocally, I never had really discovered any kind of, like, my own voice until I started to work on these songs. Because I was interpreting kind of like this invisible narrator of the album, but also approaching each song with kind of just an interior feeling. So if the first side of the album is more interior and more like I'm a victim or like I'm explaining things, the second side of the album, like this pops out of the gate, like the second side of the album is kind of like a call to action. So you know where we are. What are we going to do about this? So I was, each song, some songs I almost felt like kind of like more like a country southern vibe, and I almost felt like an accent coming out of me. This song coalesced as, like you said, I always thought I could do 90s grunge era stuff, you know, not that I ever wanted to be Eddie Vedder, but I wanted to sing like him. So right. It's like, you know, but
I picked that up. I almost feel like, you know, the scene in early on in the movie Singles where they like are at like the grunge bar or whatever, and it might have been Chris Cornell on stage or something like that, or whatever, but I'm like picturing you like on that stage. And like, man, you're bringing it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was one of the songs I felt most comfortable in that vocal range, because a lot of the demos that Mike recorded were really, I don't want to say out of my range, but really high for me to be comfortable in. Without some work, you know, so Watermarks, I was able to just bite into that song and just like attack it like a good, like Scott Weiland or something. I also love, so.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But I love finding my own voice on this album through these songs, you know, and not having to, cause my only idea for now before I met Mike was to do like 10 songs and do like what you said, like, let's do a Pearl Jam cover. Let's do an STP cover. Let's do like all the people, like, you know, like do a Doors cover. Cause I like to sing like Jim Morrison, But to actually be forced to bring like a character and a voice to a creative project, it was really exciting.
It's exciting and challenging too. For the first time you're doing it, that's a hard challenge. It's
so most people know may know or don't know, but EPJ has actually but done some acting work, and a lot of times we would talk about these in the terms of it's almost like a director sort of actor sort of relationship.
Right. Is that fair? We'd do a song and I'd be like, well, who am I in this song? You know what I mean?
Interesting.
He'd talk to me like a director almost.
And be like, okay, this is where we're headed, right? I mean, we had had these discussions many, many times.
Just saying, what you do is the hardest one to find the voice. And Comeback John was the hardest one to find the character. Watermarks was the easiest one to like just bite into and just be like, oh yeah, EPJ can do this song. You know,
very interesting that you search and try to get both of those, you know, parts of it, the character in as well as kind of the vocal approach. So that's really interesting in how they complement each other. Let's move on to Split Screen.
Models for it.
EPJ, you mentioned this earlier. You actually have a writing credit. You got a lyric credit on this one. But talk about the beginning of this song, Mike. Is it? I'm almost hearing like bongos. Is that what it is, or is it some kind of electronic percussion that?
Yeah,
it's
just a little thing I made up.
It just sounded cool.
There's little Brian Wilson touches that he sprinkles in there.
Yeah, it really catches your ear.
It to the final mix. Like, okay, that little okay.
I just like that. I was really proud of that. That's another one of those riffs. I was really proud of that. Ching. I don't know where it came from. It just like, again. It
catches your ear in the course of the record. It really does. Like Jim, it's for me, like Jim was saying, if I'm doing something else, that's the one I stop. And I'm like, wait a minute, how do you put this together? This is really cool. And we're
going to go into the rest of the two. That was the classic. I kind of remember the day because I have two demos from that day of Capo 3 G tune, Capo 4 G tune. And I think actually on the list I gave EPJ originally, it said Capo 4 something G tune or something like that.
G tune, yeah. It's like...
Now, how many guitars were used on this record altogether, Mike? Do you know?
Tracks or the actual guitars?
The actual different guitar.
So mostly it was my Fender Telecaster. That's okay. The big one. Then like on Watermarks, that's sort of, because I'm a huge Nile Rodgers fan. That's sort of Nile Rodgers.
Yeah.
I'm not in his league. I'm not claiming.
Nobody
but
is.
Like, I mean, it's like, but that was like a Strat, right? Set in Stone. That's obviously a Rickenbacker. So not a lot. Mostly the Fender.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I didn't really use a lot of effects. I mean, I would use different pickups and and record two different tracks and then use different. I have a Princeton and a Deluxe Reverb. One's a 10-inch speaker, one's a 12-inch speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And just to level it up so that it would be just a little bit fuller. I like full sound, That's really all I did. And just the amount of the recording for like you were asking about Shine and that opening guitar, it's basically the exact, it's the same guitar, same settings, except just a little bit different distortion is really all the difference. And the multiple guitars. And then I would do the thing like where I'm a capo junkie and I would like move it like way up on like on a higher fret. And then you just kind of like play little open strings and you just like get this little cheap sound.
Yeah.
I mean, I just cheat all over the place, it just makes it easier.
However you get there in the end is all that matters.
I mean, it kind of like I would have multiple tracks of guitars and then mix them there's never like more than two guitars at one time. It's just, I just like a lot of variation in the sound. Cause again, when you're thinking about the album as a whole, you can't have it all be sounding. I didn't want it to sound all the exact same.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And it doesn't sound the same if you listen to this excellent album by the Total Strangers, Watching the Sun Go Out. Sad news is that we're getting very near the end, and tomorrow is the last day of our very entertaining track by track with the Total Strangers. But the good news is there is one more day, and there's some good conversation. And we cover the final three tracks on the record and also do a little wrap-up, kind of an overview. So dig in tomorrow. It'll be a nice long podcast to take you into your weekend. And with that, we will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Capo 3 G-tune, Capo 4 G-tune.